to use social media. For example, I've never gotten PowerPoint for Mac to work when I actually have to do a presentation. So, but that's cool because who wants to look at a PowerPoint presentation anyway? So, you know, if I say anything that you find useful, then try and keep it up here or maybe write it down. So, you know, real quick, just what we're going to do here is kind of do a quick run through social media. And we're going to focus on Facebook and Twitter. And why is that? Because that's where most of the people are right now. And we're seeing some platforms like Instagram and Snapchat actually, you know, gain a lot of traction and start to be used in politics. And, you know, that's basically happening. I would say, well, Instagram was kind of in play last time around, but it's becoming a thing now. But really, you know, Facebook is the 800-pound gorilla, you know, one of the most popular sites in the world, and, you know, Twitter is also growing rapidly. And they're both really useful. They're useful for different things. So just some quick stats. Over half of adults use social media. 80% of adults are online, and 74% of them use social media. You know, we heard almost everyone's on Facebook here. 71% of online adults use Facebook, 23% use Twitter, 40% of cell phone users use social media on their phone, and actually frequent Facebook users are more political, 2.5 times more likely to attend a political rally, 53% more likely to persuade someone on their vote, and 43% more likely to vote. So people on social media are actually more likely to be engaged in politics. Also, let's keep in mind there are limits to social media. You know, we're talking about building the revolution with social media. Social media is not the revolution. It's a tool. It's just a tool to support organizing. And you can be someone, you know, we heard several people who don't like social media, and I was in that camp too. And you don't have to like it. You don't have to give all your personal information out there for everyone to see to use it as a tool for organizing. So keep that in mind. And social media can't and it should not replace traditional organizing. It complements it. And, you know, also keep in mind there are millions of people who don't use it, including a lot of lower-income people who don't have internet access. So, you know, just know the limitations of what we're dealing with. And don't rely solely on social media. You know, if you've ever used Facebook to organize an event, then you've probably seen, you know, you have 100 people RSVP and you think it's going to be a great event, and then less than half of that show up. So social media won't organize for you. You know, it's vitally important to use the other tools that you have, like phone calls, door knocking, posters, face-to-face conversations, all that stuff. But social media can be a great big help. And, you know, we're seeing that in a big way this year. The Sanders campaign used social media in a big way. And green campaigns, including Jill Stein, are using it in a big way. Let's start with Facebook. Because, again, that's where almost all of America is on Facebook. And you can reach a lot of people. It's free to use. It's connected to the largest online social media community in the world. It's one of the most popular websites. It's up there with Google. A lot of movements and campaigns have used it effectively to communicate and organize. For example, Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter. There are also some things to be aware of. It's a for-profit business with some controversial practices, some privacy issues. They're looking at your personal data for marketing purposes. And Facebook can change their rules. For example, it used to be you have a Facebook page, and anything you put out is going to reach all your Facebook fans. And that's great. So everyone made a Facebook page. And then they restricted it so that things you post often don't reach a lot of your fans at all. Now a lot of people feel that like they have to pay to actually reach the people who follow them. So just be aware that Facebook is in it for the money, and there are limitations to it, of course. So, sounds like almost everyone has a Facebook account, so we don't really need to talk too much about the nuts and bolts of doing that. You know, I'll just say real quickly, there's kind of your personal Facebook space, and then there are groups where you can join with communities of people who might be interested in the same things that you are. And those are really valuable for organizing and spreading the word. So when you're posting something on Facebook, you want to personalize it somehow. Because this is social media. It's different than traditional media, right? You want to think, okay, well, what's something that I would want to share? What's something that resonates with me? And, you know, if you're posting about politics, it's not just, okay, here's an editorial that I wrote. It's kind of, you know, why does this matter to me? And, you know, what's going to resonate with your friends? So if you're posting something, you know, write a line or two. You know, this really makes sense to me. Here's why. And then if other people engage you in conversation, that's really how you get things going. Because, you know, Facebook sees posts that are engaging, that people are liking and that they're commenting on, and it shares them with everyone because, hey, this is something interesting. That's how Facebook works. The more engaging the post, the more viral it goes, basically. So let's talk about Facebook pages first, because for political purposes, Facebook pages are what a lot of people focus on. So you have pages and you have groups. So those are two different things for folks who are not that well-versed in Facebook. So a page is a more top-down type of Facebook entity. So a political campaign or a political organization, like your state Green Party, your local Green Party, your campaign, will probably want to have a Facebook page. And only users with permission can post to that. So it's not a free-for-all. It's basically controlled by you and anyone who you want to be able to post there. And your posts, they show up in the Facebook feeds of your page's followers. So you choose a descriptive name like Howie Hawkins for New York Governor. Customize your pictures, add a short description, and you want to put a call to action in there too, like sign up for the website, you know, sign up for the email updates. So then once you have a page, you want to start posting. And again, there's this conundrum that if your posts are not engaging, then people are not going to see them. And if your posts over time are not really engaging people, then Facebook is going to limit you and limit you because just like, ah, no one really wants to see this. So you want to think, we'll do some questions later. So definitely, you know, make a note of them, keep them in mind. Just kind of want to get through sort of the quick intro to Facebook and Twitter. And then we'll do some questions and answers. So basically you want to think, okay, how am I going to engage people? And there are lots of different ways to do this, but think about, all right, well, what would I like if I saw it? What would I comment on? What would I share? So it might be a question, like, hey, what issues do you care about? It might be just make a statement that people are going to say, like, yeah, I like that. I'm going to share it. Like, hey, everyone should have healthcare. We're the richest country in the world. And sort of by trial and error, you'll figure out, okay, what's interesting to people, what's not. Again, this is social media. It's not traditional media. So if it's kind of like a very traditional style press release type thing, that's probably going to flop. But if it's something that kind of has a more human touch, people like that a lot. And pictures are great. So the key determiner of how well your page does and how well your posts do on Facebook is called engagement. So this is a combination of likes, shares, comments, and clicks. So you want to get all four of these things. And you know, as I mentioned before, all right, so let's talk a little bit about engagement because this is really important if you're running a page. Again, posts that don't get much engagement only reach a fraction of your followers. Posts with a lot of engagement can reach all the people who follow your page and more. You know, that's going to reach their friends. That's going to bring new people in. Over time, you have a baseline of reach. If your posts tend to do well, then Facebook is going to say, this is an interesting page. We're going to boost it. you know, if your posts don't get a lot of engagement, Facebook is going to be like, people are not liking this, we're going to hide it. So that's why it's important to see what's doing well and what's not doing well. And try and learn about what's doing well and do more of that. So think about creating posts that are going to create engagement and are going to benefit your outreach. So there's also some things about frequency. You don't want to post too rarely. I mean, if you're posting once a week, then people will think, like, this campaign doesn't exist. These people are barely have the time to post to Facebook once a week, so that's not a serious campaign. So you want to try and post at least once a day. But what you don't want to do is post 5 times in an hour, because then people are going to be like, too much.
Yeah.
Right? So the exception is if there's some exciting event. For example, when Jill Stein was in Philadelphia and things were happening a mile a minute and there were live streams all over the place from protests happening outside the DNC, and there are major news articles coming out and, you know, breaking news, DNC corruption all over the place. That was really exciting, and basically people were loving it. You know, people were glued to their computers following it. And if it's election day, you can be sending out pictures. Hey, here's a volunteer at the polls. Here's another one. You know, here's me voting. So if there's some exciting event, then yeah, you can be on there on social media doing a lot more posting. But in general, you know, try not to spam people. Just think about what you like. And you also want to write a little blurb for each post, right? You post an article and you write a little comment on it. This should be short and sweet, because if it's this long, no one's going to read it.
Yeah.
People scroll through their Facebook feed really quickly, so you want to grab their attention with 1 or 2 lines of text. Make them stop. Pictures are really helpful for this, because visual posts do far better than just text posts. So usually, you know, 1 to 4 sentences, grab the reader's attention, make them stop, hopefully engage with it. Best case scenario is they'll like it, they'll comment, they'll share, they'll click through and see what's going on your website and sign up. Because remember, that's the end goal here. The end goal is not to be the most popular person on Facebook, but to actually get people interested and involved in your campaign. So you always want to keep that in mind. So occasionally you want to throw in, hey, you know, sign up for email, volunteer for the campaign. Every now and then, donate, especially if it's for some specific cause and not just, I want money, but, hey, we can really use some money to print up these t-shirts for volunteers or something like that. And, get people more involved, make them feel like they're a part of it. You should have a lot of links to pages on your website, campaign events. Give people a way to get involved and feel like you're not just talking at them, but you're saying, hey, this is social media, come be a part of it. Pictures, incredibly important. Good pictures can really boost your engagement. Bad pictures can kill it. So when you post something, sometimes a picture will come up automatically and you want to think, does this make sense? Does it grab people's attention? If not, get a new picture. You want to have some stock photos for your campaign, your Green Party, pictures of your candidate, or just happy children playing outside. Something. Seriously. And every now and then on Facebook, you can use hashtags. Now, this is not as big as it is on Twitter, but if you see something is trending on Facebook, then it can be good to incorporate it into your post. For example, Black Lives Matter, or a campaign slogan like Jill Stein's slogan, It's in Our Hands. If a lot of people are posting with a hashtag, then your post might get noticed by them when it normally wouldn't. So likes, least important form of engagement, but they can help you understand what your followers are interested in. You know, if you post something about Black Lives Matter and you get 50 likes, and then you post something about tort reform, and you get 0 likes, then you have a sense of what your audience is interested in. Shares are much more helpful because they help you expand to a bigger audience, right? It's like your followers are sharing your content on their page and their groups, and that's helping you reach new people. So pay close attention to your posts that get the most shares, because you want to make an effort to recreate that so you can keep growing. Comments are also really good. It can be a way to engage people. You can ask questions. You can get feedback, because maybe you put out a statement and people say, hey, I don't like how you phrase this. And, of course, there's all sorts of discussion and debate. But it can be a really helpful way to see, what's resonating, what are people interested in, and, what do they like and what do they not like. Also, you'll get some trolls, but if people ask questions, don't automatically, ban them or anything, because sometimes people have legitimate questions, and engaging them in discussion can actually turn them into a friend. And the more discussion there is on your page, the more engagement you're getting, and it's gonna boost you. But if someone is there just to make trouble, you probably want to get rid of them and just, ban them from your page. So sort of the gold standard is clicks, because you want people to go from your social media onto your website and sign up for your email list and volunteer for your campaign, and actually get, move up the ladder of engagement here. So you might post a petition saying, hey, help me get in the debate. And then you have people sign onto that and get on your email list. And, that's a way that you're going to be able to actually get in closer contact with those people and get them directly involved with your campaign. And then there's memes. If you know a graphic designer, you can recruit one. Then that can be a huge help, because memes rule the internet. And basically what the word meme usually refers to is just an image with text on it that people share on social media. So it can be a candidate just with a quote, or it can be a rival candidate with something bad that they did. If you can get a graphic designer to help you design memes that are going to look good, then that is a huge help. Because memes are some of the most shareable content on the internet, and people talk about going viral, and basically what going viral means is one person sees your thing and they share it, and then 10 people share it from them, and 10 people share it from them. So what starts as a single post turns into 100,000 shares, and if your page posted the original thing, people are going to be checking you out and seeing, wow, the Maryland Green Party just said something really interesting with this meme, okay? Where, I've never heard of the Maryland Green Party, but now I'm going to click on their page and check them out.
Are there any copyright issues?
Let's save that for the Q&A. it's controversial. Okay, and then messages. People can also send messages to your page. So you really want to monitor this, because a lot of people... this is their portal to your campaign, to your Green Party. So people will send messages, hey, I'm in Houston, how do I get involved with the party? If you don't check those messages for a month, then that person is going to lose interest. But replying to supporters and answering their questions, that can really engage them and get them involved. If you start getting a lot of volume, you'll get frequently asked questions. Like, hey, are we in the ballot in Texas? Hey, are we in the ballot in Texas? And you can actually create a canned response to that. Like, yes, we are in the ballot in Texas. Thanks for asking. If you're interested in getting involved, go to our volunteer page. And just, with one click, send that out. So that's a really useful tool. You can also boost your posts, and you can boost ads on Facebook, so you can reach more people. You can reach targeted audiences, and you know, I won't get too much into that now, but that can be really useful. I think if people have questions about ads, then we can kind of go over that in the Q&A, but I'm not going to go too much into it now. The bottom line of Facebook pages is every state party and every campaign should have a Facebook page, and they should have people who know how to use it effectively. So let's stay on Facebook for a few more minutes, because again, that's, you know, the dominant platform. That's where, you know, everyone seems to already be. Although by the end of this workshop, I hope you're all on Twitter too. So we also have Facebook events. So you can create an event page. For example, if you're having a campaign volunteer meeting, you can put it on Facebook and invite friends, and then those people can invite friends. So it's a cheap and easy way to invite people to an event. In fact, it's free. You want to just make sure the details are there so people can find the event, and post reminders on the event page and in the lead up to it, which will notify the people who've RSVP'd. And don't rely solely on Facebook to turn people out for the event, because people will RSVP and then they won't show up. But if you sort of follow up with them, whether on social media or if you have their email information or their phone number from your state party's page or whatever, then you know, the people who RSVP on Facebook are your most likely people to actually come out to the event. So that gives you a sense of who to follow up with. And then Facebook groups. So again, we have pages and we have groups. So pages are top down, groups are horizontal. So groups are really useful for promoting discussion and sharing information. They're much more open than pages. Usually any member can post in the group. And other members may be notified about new posts in the group. It's a good way to bring together people with similar interests. And a lot of state green parties have Facebook groups, but many still don't, or they have small ones. So that's something that we need to improve on. So if your state party doesn't have a Facebook group, or if you have sort of a small one that's not very active, then I encourage everyone to make sure that, you know, they start inviting people and get people involved. But also, a lot of people change them to things like Minnesota Green Party Discussion Group, to make it clear that the people in this group are not the official representatives of the Minnesota Green Party. And that's important, because if someone says something that's problematic, you can say, hey, well, this was just a random person in the group. It's not someone speaking for the Green Party. But it's a really good way for Greens to come together and you know, sort of get some activity going. And also, when you have a Green Party page, say for example, Green Party of New York, the page will post something about their candidates, and then you can share it right away in the Green Party of New York Facebook group, because that's where there are a lot of people who are interested in that type of content, and they're going to go out and share it in their anti-fracking groups, and you know, in their socialist groups, and in their Black Lives Matter groups. So that's kind of you know, a good place for Greens to huddle and sort of strategize for social media. And then there's moderation. You want to make sure the discourse is respectful, that it's in the line with the goals and principles of the Green Party. You know, no violent rhetoric or anything, no you know, oppressive words or anything like that. It's good to post guidelines at the top of your page to make sure everyone knows what the ground rules are, and that if you violate the ground rules, then you know, you might be out of there, because people need a respectful space you know, to organize in. So again, the bottom line of Facebook groups: every state Green Party should have a Facebook group, and you know, every local Green Party eventually should have a Facebook group to share information, support your campaigns, support your organizing, and get people connected. All right, so Yeah, we're doing pretty good for time. I know I'm talking a lot, but I just want to get through things to give people a chance to ask their questions. So thanks for being patient with me. And I told you that I don't like PowerPoint, right? PowerPoint doesn't like me either.
Can I ask a quick question? Because I have to leave and go too.
You may ask a quick question if you have to leave. What is it?
So we've been trying to gauge in Baltimore, we've been playing with, when is the best time of day to post? Because there's more traffic, it seems, at certain points in the, of the day on the internet. So what do you suggest as far as...
Can't hear in the back. Could you...
So the question is, what's the best time of day to post? And, you know, that's a little bit controversial, but I think it's good to post sort of during business hours, because people are at work, they're bored, and they're seeing what's good on Facebook. Noon tends to be good, that's lunchtime, people are on break. Also, the evening can be good. Not super late, but kind of like after dinner time, when, you know, again, people are jumping on the internet and seeing what's going on.
Friday, Saturday nights later.
But, yeah, but really, and, you know, we'll do questions later. It's just that Bonnie had to go. Yeah. But again, you know, just experiment and see what works for you, see what people like.
We've been doing that.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Can we save the questions and comments for after we get through Twitter?
I forget all about what you're talking about when I can't make a comment instantaneously.
Well, could you write it down then, please? If you could write it down, please, so we can keep trucking through and make sure that everyone who wants to talk at the end has a chance. Thank you. All right. So, Twitter. This is less widely used than Facebook, but it's an essential tool in U.S. politics. And in many ways, it's more powerful than Facebook. Because Twitter is more of a platform to be a part of the public conversation. It's more of a way to inject your voice into the public conversation. Lots of journalists are on Twitter. And lots of influencers of various kinds, whether celebrities or artists or politicians. Most of them are on Twitter. And sometimes you can draw them into a conversation. Tweets from political parties and campaigns about hot issues are often in the news. So, for example, our experience on the Jill Stein campaign, if something goes on our Twitter, sometimes we see an article about it 15 minutes later, in Politico or the Washington Post. That doesn't happen with Facebook.
Can you give an example of that?
I can do, I would say, for example, when Jill Stein was live tweeting both national conventions, really. Mm-hmm. When Jill Stein was live tweeting Bernie Sanders' endorsement of Hillary Clinton, it was up on Politico immediately and, started going viral immediately. And that was basically what kicked off a week of Jill Stein going viral on social media. Was live tweeting that endorsement speech and, just a complete takedown of the Clinton campaign. And actually also live when Jill was live tweeting Trump's speech. And interestingly enough, not so much Clinton's acceptance speech. And it seems like the media was kind of more controlling the message on that one. But some of the, some of Jill's burns of Trump made the rounds of the internet. It's pretty great. But anyway, let's get back on track for a second here, because some people still don't know what Twitter is. All right, the basics of Twitter. So a Twitter account, it has what we call a handle. Starts with the at sign, for example, at Dr. Jill Stein. And you see these on the news, for example. You'll see Jill Stein, and then underneath it'll have her Twitter handle, so people can follow her. And you send out messages that are called tweets, and they have to be 140 characters or less. And unlike Facebook, all of your followers see all of your tweets. So if someone follows you, then every single one of your tweets is going to show up in their feed. You can put in pictures, but they take up some of your character limit. You can put in links, but they take up some of your character limit. And also, Twitter is where hashtags really became a thing. So hashtags start with the pound or hash sign, and then have words, no punctuation in hashtags, no spaces. But you know, some hashtags are incredible. You know, are just household words. For example, Black Lives Matter. So hashtags are important, and the reason is because people search by hashtags. So they say, okay, well, Black Lives Matter protests are going on, so you know, they search by the Black Lives Matter hashtag, and then they see, you know, you can see everyone who's tweeting out about Black Lives Matter, and you can also see the most popular tweets about Black Lives Matter, including in your area. So it's basically a way for people to find what they're interested in. And it's also a way that you can be a part, you can be in that protest, taking pictures and tweeting them out with that hashtag, and people all over the world will see, you know, this is the Black Lives Matter protest in Baltimore from this account. So when you, you know, someone, I heard at least one person say, okay, I'm on Twitter, but I'm kind of scared of it. And we've, you know, a lot of us have been there. It can feel pretty lonely at first, because you get on Facebook and everyone's on there, your mom's on there. But with Twitter, it's like, hey, where is everybody? I don't have any followers. What's going on? But don't worry, you can build a following. You know, first of all, you can allow Twitter to search your contact list to find people you know. So if you follow them, if you follow your friends, they'll probably follow you back. So, you know, if you're a candidate or a state party, include a link to your Twitter on your website. Don't be shy to use Facebook to invite people to follow you on Twitter. Building a green following, we have a large and growing network of greens on Twitter. And greens are happy to follow other greens because, hey, you're finding like-minded people. You know, you're finding a community on Twitter. So look at existing green accounts. Look at their followers. You know, for example, if you're running for mayor, if I'm running for mayor of Houston, I'm going to look at the Texas Green Party and the Houston Green Party Twitter accounts and see who's following them. And then, you know, use that to find people to follow, and they'll see, okay, this person is running for mayor, I'm going to follow them back. So if you don't have much of a Twitter following, the best time to start building it is now.
Can we do that here? Can we take, like, after you're done, take, like, 5 minutes and be like, who's on Twitter? And we all follow each other? And
yeah. Totally. That's a great idea.
Something to the Green Party. And, but yeah.
That is a great idea. And I'm glad you brought that up. Because, I totally want people to use this convention as a chance to get on Facebook and Twitter and think about getting on Instagram.
Instagram's good.
So, unlike Facebook, so Twitter doesn't have an algorithm that punishes you for posting too much. You can tweet as frequently as you have something to say. And some people tweet more frequently than that. Some of them are running for president.
Yeah.
Just be mindful. If you tweet a lot, some people will find it too much and they'll unfollow you. So, again, it's like, you know, when you have something to say, go for it. And then sharing someone else's tweet is called retweeting. And, again, that... sort of like Facebook sharing, this is how you're going to expand your following. So if someone with a large following retweets you, that can really help you to reach new followers. So say, for example, you're running for office in your local community and you have an activist who is well known in the community, and you know, you meet them at a protest, you take a picture of you with them and it's like, hey, we're both standing to ban fracking. And then, you know, tweet it, give them a mention in there. So right, at, you know, Fractivist, put their Twitter handle in there and it'll notify them. And then maybe they'll be like, hey, that's a nice picture, and retweet it. And they might even say, hey, you know, check out this campaign. They're running to ban fracking and they're staying with the movement. So then that person's followers are going to be like, hey, this is awesome. There's a candidate who's running to ban fracking. So retweeting is often a show of agreement or respect. It can build relationships. A mention is when you include someone's handle in your tweet. Not at the very beginning, because that's a message. My example is, okay, if you say, you know, justice for Eric Garner, then hashtag Black Lives Matter. And at the end you put at vote James Lane. Okay, so, and maybe you have a picture of James Lane at a Justice for Eric Garner protest. So, then people are going to figure out then that, all right, so here's a candidate who is, you know, standing with the Black Lives Matter movement, and it's going to, I lost my train of thought here. So then James Lane, whose handle is Vote James Lane, is going to see that you mentioned him, and you know, he might retweet that, or he might connect with you and say, hey, thanks for the mention, do you want to get involved with the campaign? So it can lead to a public conversation, or it can lead to a private conversation. You know, sometimes, for example, you'll say, hey, celebrity that stands with the same cause, what do you think of this? And they might retweet you and say, that's awesome. Or they might send you a private message and say, yeah, you know, let's talk sometime, here's my number. So you can reach, you know, influential people, you can reach interested people, engage new people. And you can also send direct messages that are not public, but that just go directly to people. And this is good for journalists too. It's good for people you want to get engaged, and it's good for journalists, because you can say, you know, I'm having this press conference tomorrow. Thanks for mentioning my campaign before. I want to make sure that you're aware of this.
I don't want to interrupt, but I was wondering, because a lot of people in here are newbies, maybe we can get their name and their email address and create like a private Facebook group so that they can learn within a group of people who are at the same level as them, who are also greens, how to use, and, you know, how to use social media and provide like tips to them.
Well, you know, what I would recommend is actually that people join Facebook groups that already exist.
Okay.
And basically ask for help using social media. For example, I see people on green Facebook groups saying, hey, I'm new on Twitter. Anyone else here looking for Twitter friends, you know, that wants to tweet about the Green Party? Then people will kind of connect with each other and say, all right, you know, here's some tips if you're just beginning. So, you know, don't be afraid to reach out for help. I think, you know, afterwards, for people who want to, we should definitely, you know, connect and see, you know, who's on social media, who wants to join social media, and, you know, what are some resources that can help people learn how to use it effectively. And then on your Twitter account, there are notifications. So notifications tell you when people mention you, when they retweet your content, or when they like your content. So if you check your notifications, that gives you a sense to see who's trying to engage you in conversation. And, you know, maybe find people who will be followers, or, you know, who will help with your campaign or party. So another thing is, people get on Twitter and they're not sure what to tweet about, right? Because you go on Facebook and it's like, okay, send out a picture of my lunch and then talk about my favorite bands. And, you know, but...
We don't have time.
Yeah. Right. There's no time for that. Not on Twitter.
So what is your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle?
Yeah.
My Twitter handle is Free Dave Schwab. So.
It's a good deal.
I know, right?
Free to bet, I'll take it.
Okay, so we'll share Twitter handles later. But first, we got to make sure everyone knows what to tweet about. So, a sure bet for a political campaign or party is positions on issues, especially hot issues. And sometimes you can see issues that are trending. You look on the sidebar of Twitter, and some things are trending. For example, if your campaign is talking a lot about healthcare, and then one day Affordable Care Act is trending, then you can say, hey, the Affordable Care Act left a lot of people uninsured. What we really need is Medicare for all. And because it's trending, that means people are going to be searching for it and seeing, okay, what are people saying about the Affordable Care Act? And then, all right, hey, it looks like the Florida Green Party said we need Medicare for all. I'm going to check out what else they have to say. Videos, pictures, memes, images really, again, grab people's attention because they're looking pretty quickly through their feed. And you want to grab their attention and make them stop. So event announcements. Tweet out if you're going to have a campaign event or a press conference or fundraiser. Again, remember, a lot of journalists are on Twitter, and they're sort of looking around for local events. Responses to current events, statements by politicians, breaking news. If your opponent says something dumb, get on Twitter and call them out. For example, they start attacking veterans and saying, oh, these veterans didn't really make any sacrifices, then get on Twitter and say, like, that is a disgraceful thing to say. And people are going to be like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Breaking news. If it just came out, there's an oil spill somewhere in the state, sort of thing that happens, in the Midwest, get on Twitter and, be the first to comment about it and say, this is why we need to transition to 100% renewable energy, because we can no longer be dumping oil into the Great Lakes, things like that. And, again, if you have a hot take on something, journalists might pick up on it and say, hey, the Green Party candidate was on the scene, immediately got on Twitter and said, this about the issue. And then action alerts, volunteer opportunities, again, you want to get people engaged. You want to, give them links to your website, give them links to your events, give people ways to get involved. So Twitter is not you talking at people. It's starting a conversation. And you can also jump into a conversation. For example, say your opponent is on Twitter and they say something that you think is over the line, you can reply to it. And you can say, at Donald Trump or at Hillary Clinton, hey, that's a super hypocritical thing to say because of what you did just last year. And people are going to see that. Basically, Twitter is a great big conversation, a great big public conversation. So you can inject yourself into the conversation, even if you're not necessarily invited, which is a great thing for Greens. Sometimes if you see quotes or memes that complement your message, or just activists who are doing good work in the community, show them some respect by retweeting their stuff and say, hey, this is an example of someone being an awesome citizen. Doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to come and vote for you, but maybe you'll make a new friend. Retweet like-minded people, campaigns, and organizations. Send them encouraging statements. If you're running for governor, say, hey, shout out to you know, this young woman who's running for city council in a small town, you know, we need more people like her. You know, and then if followers send statements of support to you, like, right on, this is exactly the sort of campaign I want to see, then retweet that, because that makes them feel good, and it shows that, you know, you have people out there who are showing support. So in a big way, Twitter is a way to be your own media, and, you know, it's so powerful the more you kind of get to know how to use it. All right, so I want to do some closing thoughts and then do some questions. So social media, again, it can't replace traditional organizing, but if you do it right, it can be a huge boost to your overall organizing efforts. So every state Green Party should have a Facebook page, a Facebook group, and a Twitter account. And if your state party doesn't have these three things and people who know how to use them, talk to your state party's officers about starting them as soon as possible. Think about the scale of your campaign and the resources you have before deciding how much time, energy, and money to invest in social media. Because, you know, say if you have one person running the campaign, you're not going to be able to have, you know, pages for every single county in your state, right? So just sort of be realistic about what your capacity is. But having a volunteer or staffer manage your social media, especially one with some experience and some good communication skills, can really help a lot. Just make sure it's someone you know and trust, not just you know, the first person who pops up on Facebook. And just a few more closing thoughts, and then it's question time. Social media can get people in trouble, so be careful, especially in politics. If you make a controversial statement, or even something that can be misinterpreted, because the media likes to misinterpret things that politics say, believe it or not. Think before you post. You know, avoid posts that could be misunderstood, that could offend supporters, that could give ammo to opponents. An example of this is when, you know, the killing of Harambe, and we said we really need more rights for animals, especially primates. And saying especially primates set some people off, because they say, why are primates better than other animals? So we just didn't think of how people would interpret that.
And they didn't think about how to respond.
Yeah, social media can be a platform for negativity, time-wasting debates. Don't get sucked into the negative aspects. Don't get discouraged by them either. There are actually people who are paid to be trolls on social media. Hillary Clinton has paid $6 million for people to be negative on social media so far. So don't be discouraged by that. In fact, the more people attack you, the more it shows you're having an impact. So just take it all with a grain of salt. Do what you can to make social media a more positive, welcoming, informative, and inspiring space. And I think a green approach to social media is don't use it for its own sake or to gain fame and popularity. Just think of it as one more tool to help build a bridge to the better world that we all know is possible. Okay, so that's all that I have to say for now. So we have some hands, I see questions. Okay, so let's start from the back of the room and move to the front. So I see you back there. If you could ask your question, please.
One thing you did mention was connecting social medias. Connecting your Facebook and your Twitter.
So I don't recommend directly connecting your Facebook and Twitter. And here's why. Because they're different mediums, and if you post something on Facebook that looks like a tweet, then people might say, hey man, this is Facebook, not Twitter. And sometimes those posts don't get a lot of engagement. However, one interesting thing that we found this year is that before we had a graphic designer on the team, sometimes we just take screenshots of Jill Stein's popular tweets mm-hmm. and post them as photos on her page, and those are really popular.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's basically you know, memes on the cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you know, again, it's about sort of trying things and seeing what works and what doesn't. Question?
I just wanted to suggest that you suggest TweetDeck to people, because Twitter can be so overwhelming. You know, you can follow 100 places that you like, that that you think are in your realm. But to go through the whole, you know, every single tweet, whereas TweetDeck, you can put everything in columns and sort of look at the overall thing and look at, you know, the people that you really care about following are going to be in one column.
Yeah.
And those are the tweets that you might look first and then retweet to others. I'm following Joyce Carol Oates because she's from my hometown. She has 130,000 followers. She follows me, which is like unbelievable. Okay? So if I could get a tweet through to her, so I watch all of her tweets, I reply, I form tweets that I think she will retweet, and whenever she retweets any of my original tweets, I get like 100 replies from them. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you have TweetDeck and it's really easy, all you have to do is make a column for the tweets that you really want to see. And
yeah.
I don't know how, because it can be so overwhelming,
yeah.
You know?
That's a really good point. And there's a lot of, you know, Twitter is very democratic in that they will show every single tweet.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a great thing in many ways. But no one expects you to read every single tweet on Twitter. And there are apps that can help you to navigate it, to use it more effectively, and to, you know, find the stuff that you're looking for. So yeah, TweetDeck is one. Hootsuite is another. And really there are a number of free apps. Or, you know, you can even pay a little bit and get access to some more features. But yeah, so again, it's like, don't be overwhelmed by Twitter. Just, you know, keep learning about it and asking people for help. And you'll find it's a really powerful tool. And the last thing I would say is that if you want to make friends with people on Twitter, then defend them and advocate for them. Because, you know, for example, if a politician is facing a lot of attacks, they don't want to just be defending themselves all the time. So if they have people who are there to cut through the spin and say, no, that's not what he said, you know, here's what he's advocating for, and, you know, you're misrepresenting that, you know, that's a way to make a new friend. Imagine it's the same for celebrities. Okay, right here.
Is there truth to the, on going around, suggestion that Facebook, Twitter has the ability to block or suppress certain people's statements or suppress, you know, to prevent them from becoming more popular, or, you know, and I don't know, I mean, I've heard that, like when the Bernie walkout happened, I heard that tweets about that were being suppressed and
censored.
Exactly, thank you.
That, you know, that is, here's the thing, Facebook and Twitter are for-profit businesses.
Sure.
And their algorithms are proprietary information, and a lot of their business practices are proprietary information. So we don't know everything that goes on. And you might remember there was some controversy about whether Facebook was sort of downvoting conservative stuff in their trending topics. So trending topics started on Twitter and now are on Facebook as well. And that's something where there's a lot of accusations of gaming the system. And a lot of people said that the DNC walkout and Dem exit were censored by Twitter. I don't know. I haven't seen conclusive evidence of that. But the thing is that Twitter also... So this is maybe a weird example to use, but terrorist groups use Twitter, and they get banned, but then they just start another account. And there's actually very little that Twitter can do about that without totally changing how their system works, and having to pre-approve every single account. So even if Twitter is trying to control people, which I'm not sure they are, there are still ways to get around that. So this is sort of the constant give and take of social media. Mm-hmm. Is they're in it to make a profit, and maybe they have another agenda as well. But we can use it as a tool. you know, and recognize the limitations while we do that.
Hey, Dave.
And,
oops, sorry. When you're done with that point, I got sent down here from the National Committee to interrupt.
Okay.
There's a National Committee hearing here, or going on right now down in 210. They said they have some very, very important business to discuss. And there's an also an impromptu steering committee candidates forum that no one was told about. Happening in about a half hour, 20 minutes for the national party.
Someone said TYT's interviewing Jill at 5?
I don't know. I just know that I walked into the national committee meeting and it was almost empty and they were freaking out about that. And then
I got a text for that.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you're a national committee member, it might behoove you to...
But only national. Huh? Only national.
Yeah, I mean, if people are interested in that, you know, but... Dave, I'm sorry. So
could everyone tweet out right now?
Yeah, tweet it.
Reminder, there's a very well-planned steering committee meeting or forum going on.
Because there's actually candidates that we can't get a hold of that haven't been told, and so we're running from room to room trying to find them.
National Committee delegate walkout of workshop.
So I apologize. Yes. I apologize for what I just did to your thing.
That's okay. No, that's a great example.
210. So super important social media.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Right here.
So one thing that's become popular that I'm noticing is Facebook Live or
yes.
YouTube photos or YouTube videos, and so I'm wondering. For example, Robert Reich does Facebook office hours. That gets a lot of followings. But for someone who's trying to start a campaign, what would you suggest is a way to incorporate Facebook Live that's not necessarily direct action at protests, but rather trying to get their information across?
Yeah, Facebook Live. Thank you for bringing that up, because Facebook Live and live streaming in general is a really powerful tool. And you know, Facebook especially seems to be really promoting Facebook Live. At least for now. So
we're live right now, by the way.
Good to know.
At the end. Let me share my hands, Mike.
So, you know, basically, one obvious way for candidates and parties to use Facebook Live is to do a Q&A session. Because there is sort of a live feed of comments from people who are watching that you can actually see. It's good if you have actually two people, so one person who's on camera and another person who can sort of feed them the questions. But we did this so that the evening that Sanders endorsed Clinton, we did a live stream with Jill Stein that we actually promoted ahead of time by sending out emails and, you know, putting out memes on social media. And we said, hey, Jill Stein's going to be on Facebook Live at this time, so tune in. So it was an hour long, and so she started, she just gave basically a 10 or 15 minute talk, and then started doing questions and answers. So this was huge. It reached over 2 million people in a couple of hours, and it had over 300,000 people watched an hour long video, just basically on the first day. So. And the amazing thing was, at that time, Jill Stein was a trending topic on that day. So not only was she trending, but there was a little live icon next to her name. So people could just click on that and immediately go and see the live stream. So it was really this amazing sort of convergence of events. And then people were typing in their questions, and they were coming fast and furious. But we had people to pick them up and say, okay, you know, Jose is asking about healthcare, and then we'd feed that question to Jill. And she would say, okay, you know, thanks, Jose, for this really important question about our healthcare platform. So, you know, that's a way of connecting with people and building the excitement, because, like, hey, maybe your question is going to be picked by the candidate, and you can get a direct answer. Just know that, you know, it can be a free-for-all. So people might ask about things that you're not necessarily prepared to talk about, and... You know, I think that's okay too, because you don't have to answer every single question. But yeah, so, you know, question answer is a good way. When just a couple hours ago, Jill Stein had a free moment in her hotel, and she just did a quick little live stream, like, hey, I'm here in Houston at the Green National Convention. Things are super exciting. And you know, tomorrow we're going to be doing a whole bunch of live streaming with the nominating convention. So, and you know, that sort of thing can kind of create a personal connection. And yeah, you know, there's press conferences. There are just campaign events with speeches. There are direct actions. You know, you can be part of a protest. Yeah, just try it out and see what works. The one thing that you want is a good connection, because nothing's worse than a live stream that just stops and starts. And yeah.
Are they archived?
Yes, they are. They're saved as videos on your page. And you can also live stream on Twitter using an app called Periscope. So, question over here?
Yeah, I'm new to Twitter, and I got about 18 followers now.
Awesome.
Really exciting. But I've also got notifications that people have added me to a list.
Yeah.
People would say, you've been added to this list, and I have no idea what that means or if it's useful for you.
It might be.
It is.
Depending on what the list is. For example, maybe someone in your city is making a list of local Greens, and they've noticed that you tweet about, you know, Green Party stuff, and so they add you to that list. So check out the list and see what it is.
Because what is a list of Twitter?
So a list is, it's a list of Twitter accounts that, and usually they give it a name. So for example, you create a list or someone adds you to a list that might be called Chicago Greens. So you check it out and you see, okay, well, here's a list of 100 people in the Chicago area who are Greens or tweet about Green stuff. Or, you know, maybe the list is people who tweet about pancakes.
It's just a contact list.
It's a great organizing tool for Twitter. Should they start passing around a list?
I mean,
where people
can people, like,
tweet
out to everybody on your list?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So just pass this around, and then we can take pictures of this at the end to make it easier. So this is just, everyone can write down their Twitter.
Yeah, so let's start.
As far as Facebook goes, if we're going to share friends, we probably have to do that more personally, because it's too hard to write down names of them for each other. So we'll have to do that after. Yeah.
Okay, so does that answer your question about lists?
Yeah.
Okay,
if
great.
If you have the one, just raise
your hand. All right, and
yeah.
Right here?
You know, on Facebook, we always get this little notice that for $5 you can.
Right.
So could you get $1?
Yeah, sure. So on Facebook, there are different kinds of promotion. So you can boost posts on your page, which is basically you start with a regular old free post, and you can boost it to reach more people. And this sometimes can be a good idea. If you have one post that does really well, then you might want to boost it. And you can choose target audiences. So say, for example, if you want to reach people in Chicago who have an interest in Green Party stuff, you can actually target to those people. So I think sometimes boosting does make sense. But, you know, just boosting a post is not going to make a bad post into a hit. So, you know, be aware of that. And so there are also Facebook ads. And the difference is that Facebook ads don't show up on your page's timeline. They'll show up in people's feeds and on their sidebars, you know, depending on what you want them to do. But sometimes that can be useful too. For example, you don't want to be constantly posting things on your webpage, on your Facebook page, let's say, give us money, give us money, give us money. But you might want to actually try some ads that are targeted to Greens in your state that say, hey, you know, can you pitch in $5? It's $5 Friday. And see how that does, because Facebook will actually track the statistics for you. And, you know, you can see, okay, well, if I put $10 into this ad and, you know, five people give $5, then that's something we should keep trying. So, you know, there's kind of a lot more, but if you get started with it, it's actually not that hard to do, and sometimes it can be a good strategy. Yeah, go ahead.
Yep. You mentioned about having canned responses in Facebook.
Yeah.
So that's, there's a way in Facebook to do that? I copy paste in responses, but I didn't know I could do it automatically.
So if you have a page, people will message your page. Yeah. Say, for example, you have Illinois Green Party, and people are, you know, maybe you get 20.